it in, looking for Garza, backside and in for the first goal in Atlanta United history from Yamil Assad.
Take a look at history.
Well, hi, y'all. Welcome to...
Wow, that was a good one.
Felt that one deep.
We're keeping that.
Hello, everybody.
Sam, and it's been so long.
Dude, it's been forever. I had that "hi, y'all" deep inside me for like the last 2 weeks or so or whatever since we've done the show. And it just all came out at once. But man, I don't even care. I don't care about nothing. Nothing's going to distract me. I guess I should introduce the show first, though. This is Five Stripe Final, a highly distributed audio discussion discussing all things Atlanta United, blah, blah, blah. We won MLS Cup. That's all that matters. That's all you guys need to know. Welcome to an MLS Cup HDAD podcast, whatever the hell you want to call it. We don't care because you know what? For once in our miserable, miserable lives, we won something.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Really, thank
okay.
God.
So, like, let's go right off the bat here. Let's go bizarro world where Portland comes out and somehow just pushes us around and Laris Mabiala decides to not look like a drunken bulldozer slash elephant combo and run over everything and ruin everything and somehow scores like three goals and we end up losing MLS Cup. What would the mood and what would your personal life be like right now?
Oh, my God. It would be so bad. I mean, I said before the game that I was going to be crying one way or another afterwards. It was either going to be out of happiness or out of utter despair. Uh-huh. And, oh, man, my God, if we had lost and then the chatter comes up about losing Miguel and losing, you know, all the offseason moves that tend to happen and Tata's leaving and how much of a failure Atlanta United would have been for not having accomplished anything with all these. You know, I shudder to think of it.
God, I can't imagine just like how many people I would have had to go in on who would have said dumb stuff like, well, Tata leaving was a distraction or something ridiculous like that.
Just imagine Doyle. Like it would have been
worse.
A playground for him.
Yeah. Most of them less digital, honestly. They would have relished it. More than us winning, I think. And therefore, there would have been a lot of going in.
The editorial staff,
to, like,
for sure.
Somehow reckon with it. You know, you would have to just work through it all by anger tweeting through it. And then just the mentions would be terrible. Everything would be bad. And God, man, I probably would just quit. I legitimately would have just quit sports, I think.
Well, I mean, I was sitting with the MLS digital people because I was kind of working as their Atlanta United reporter for the night. And like, I can tell you they were rooting for Portland, at least after Atlanta got a lead. Like, they were always wanting Portland to, you know, get back in it, which I get. You know, I get it. I get that they want it to be a close game and everything from there. You know, so there's more interesting things to write about. But yeah, it was like I was actually kind of taken aback how like openly like it was like whenever like the ball came close to Atlanta's goal, it was like, oh, you know, it was like a, like audible, you know, emotes. So, it's great because instead of that, all that bad stuff happening, it's been like not only did we get the win and all the jubilation and satisfaction that comes with that, but then also like the salty Portland fans, which has been like great.
Who have
just
been
like
so very salty.
I feel like Scrooge McDuck diving into the pile of coins just in the salt, you know.
It was weird going into this. If we had done a preview kind of thing for it, I would have talked about, I think I talked about it on the first Portland show where I kind of talked about how like if I just had to like straight up pick a team before Atlanta existed, I would have picked Portland probably. Like just from like the fan base and the really gorgeous green uniforms and everything like that. Portland's just kind of a cool club and everything. And now I'm like on the total other end of that spectrum. Like screw these pretentious, terrible humans who are like so up their own rear ends that I never want to hear from them again. It all came to a head. It started with them like demanding more seats for an away playoff game. Fine, whatever. But the letter they wrote was so like, how dare you invalidate the most perfect and beautiful things, the supporter section. And I wanted to blow my brains out. And then they didn't get their drums in, which was objectively funny to me. Even though I did feel kind of bad, they didn't get their drums into the section, whatever. And then that dude wrote like a 700 word thing about how we thought the Golden Spike tradition was dumb and like ruined soccer or something like that. What's his name? Is it
Dan Cox,
I believe.
I'd never heard of the guy. I know him now. He's world famous now.
Oh yeah. Extremely famous. Extremely famous. Our friend Don.
Good Don. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Goes and not only puts this on the Timbers blog, the Timbers Army blog or whatever, but prints it out just for safekeeping. Like any old white dude would do to hold on to a thing they had written.
Don has his own bulletin board full of his material that gets him hyped.
Exactly. Oh, I can't find the post right now. I know he...
Well, he took it down. It was taken down.
Yes.
Off the Timbers Army blog. There were screenshots of it, of course, because Don himself had posted screenshots on Twitter, which I find really funny now that it's been taken down. And now the only reason people know what it said is because Don posted it for everybody on Twitter.
That screenshot is now gone as well.
Oh, really?
So that's fun. Man, that's too bad.
I'm sure anyway, it still exists out there somewhere, but it would take some deeper digging.
Right. We do not bring that level of preparation to this kind of show.
you should see our preparation. It is
it's about as prepared as the 3-minute video we did from the floor of Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yeah.
After the game. But no, Don just decides to go off on the loud hippity hop being played inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Like 45 minutes before the game. How dare they play music before the game?
He demands silence so that he can sing for an hour before the game. As soon as the lineups are announced, he starts singing. And he doesn't stop singing until an hour after the game when the last person has left the stadium.
Like a real fan. And the rest of the rest of the fans are just spectators. They are not supporters, quotation marks. And that makes him better. And he also played high school basketball, so don't miss him. That's a hell of a... Seriously, though, go find that blog post somewhere.
It's unbelievable. It's something you would think would be posted by The Onion or something.
This was a Nutmeg Nutmeg news article,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Nutmeg Nutmeg, yeah. But, yeah. Anyways, they went home sad. That's all that matters. We saw them at various cookouts throughout Atlanta, apparently, too. Because they didn't know where to find milkshakes, and they went to cookout. And Seattle football told us he laughed at them inside the cookout. So all in all, Atlanta gets the job done. We really didn't have to. We could get into the game a little bit, but mostly Atlanta just kind of controlled the whole damn thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's that much we can need to even talk about. I feel like it's been talked about to death. And if you're listening to this podcast, you've surely listened to some other podcast that's already kind of broken down the game.
Yeah, and what can you really say except that Atlanta just was more talented and better at soccer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how it broke down.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, you just kind of, the quality difference was unreal. And it's one of those things where you look back at the Eastern Conference Finals and go, okay, that was probably the actual like championship. You know, whoever was coming out of that, I don't think Portland touches either Atlanta or Red Bulls, quite frankly. Even with Chris Armas blowing it all the time, just blowing it. It ends up it ends up really well for us. Joe was separated from me in the press box, which was extremely disturbing and disheartening. I hated all of it.
Yeah, I mentioned that I had separation anxiety, and I'm like dead serious. I was like not it made me anxious to not kind of be in my normal routine. Like to be in like my normal seat, you know, with like normal people around me. It gave me anxiety. And I think just all like just the fact that there was 200 more people up in the press box than there normally is also adds to a bit of that anxiety. But
I was crazy, I'm sorry, on just like Atlanta choking, that I really didn't consider too much of it. And I was set next to SB Nation folks too, so that made it a little more bearable. Even Will from Stumptown Footy was excellent. I was gonna sit next to him, talk about things for a little bit. But yeah, Miss Joe. Sorry, Joe, what was like, I know what my reactions to everything were at the end of the game, but were you keeping it together at the end of the game at the final whistle?
Yeah, I almost got emotional. I kept it in. But I did decide with for like the last 5 minutes of the game or so, I just shut down my laptop and stopped working. So I was trying to pre-write some stuff, and you know, I just wanted to I felt actually kind of bad. I was like, wait, I need to like stop and take this in for a second. I was missing the game, which like it's one of those dirty secrets that I think a lot of like journalists have. They don't want to tell you. Oftentimes fans are paying closer attention, especially to like the second half, because a lot of journalists are already starting to try to write their stories to be able to get them out on time. So you're just kind of glancing up at the back at the game just to make sure nothing crazy is happening. So that's kind of where I was, but you know, I kind of realized at the end of the game, I needed to, just kind of shut everything down, just relax and, take it in, which I did. And that was very nice, very enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's excellent. It's
I was
excellent.
Over by yeah. Mitch, our guy, Mitch from Pro Soccer USA. He was kind of near me, so we weren't really talking, but at least I had him there to kind of give me some comfort.
That's good. I did a decent job of holding in for the most part. I think especially having a Portland rider next to me really kind of kept it in.
Yeah.
I mean, I was getting a little choked up towards the end there. But then got into the elevator to go down to the locker room, and Felipe Cardenas from The Athletic, the jerk, says something to the effect of, "Sam, this is cool for you, isn't it? You're like from Atlanta." And like, I lost it. I was trying to control myself a little bit, but I definitely cried in an elevator full of of journalists who were all looking at me like I was insane and didn't want to touch me with the 10-foot pole. But worth it.
Yeah, it was great.
I got out in the elevator and then came out and did my job. So, you know what? Screw it.
Unfortunately, it wasn't hard to kind of keep my emotions trapped in for the first goal that was scored, because it was like right away I was like, okay, well, you know, yeah, the ball's gone into the net. But, you know, and I was pretty much anticipating it being called out off, you know, having VAR deny the goal for some reason or another. Mm. Shocked that it held up. I was like... I was staunchly like, no, it is no goal until the game kicks off again. And, you know, it did. So that was nice. But it did take away from that goal. And I think that this is kind of the point I made against VAR all season, is that the game is just kind of being played retroactively. Or, you know, it's just, I don't know. You just wish you could just really celebrate with all your vigor as soon as you see the linesman with his flag down. But that's just me. Some people don't want it that way, which is fine.
Yeah,
actually, no, it's fair. Not fine. Those people can go to hell.
We've come full circle on the VAR discussion too, which is nice. We started the year with it, and we came all the way back to the last one. That was good. It's good. You talked about like journalists not being able to see everything all the time. I missed the Parker's tackle part of it. Like, I just looked up and saw the ball going towards Joseph, and went, oh, "Okay, this could be fun." So I was able to keep it in pretty well there as well. But for Parkey to be the one there to make that play, the one that really gets things going for us in his fifth try trying to win MLS Cup, that's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. Sports are beautiful sometimes.
Yeah, especially with him having the injury, you know, suffered at the very end of leg two against Red Bulls, for him to, you know, come back from that. Play, obviously he's been pretty well chronicled the struggles that he's had in MLS Cup finals, having lost four of them, like the Buffalo Bills, to come back and kind of have like the moment of glory in that game. Yeah, that's great.
Pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. And Joseph does Joseph. You know, he gets on the end of the goal and gets on the end of the flick that set up Escobar. He even drew the foul where Mabiala came and tried to give him a piggyback ride while simultaneously kicking him in the face that set up the free kick that led to the goal. So Joseph was excellent as well. Of course, grabs another trophy for him. Has a whole bunch now sitting on his mantle, as well as that framed picture of Joe Bendick laying on the floor after the record-breaking goal. Yeah, all in all, the game, solid, just nice. If it was a regular season game, that was good.
Haven't talked about the most important part of that game, which was the Miguel Almiron ball roll. That's exactly the play that happens in Rec when there's just one guy who's way better than everybody else and he just starts wanting to make everyone look ridiculous.
Yep. Exactly. They were two up at that point, but he does this thing where he turns and moves laterally while rolling the ball, and then with the same foot he rolls the ball with, pops it up over in between two dudes, right to the path of Julian Gressel, like hits him in stride. And I thought it was pretty cool. And like at this point, the video of that thing has... Let's see.
It has 1,100 likes. I'm going to start calling you the one grand man.
1,100 likes there on that video.
Like tweets like it's breakfast.
It also has a whole bunch of quote tweets from people in the Premier League like, well, West Ham could do this any day of the week. And it's kind of like, man, I really don't know what West Ham you've been watching, but I don't know. It seems to be the fact that it occurred in MLS.
I remember it,
invaluable.
I remember when that play happened during the game, and even the people that were sitting next to me that were rooting for Portland were like, oh. there was like a oh my god. Yeah. Kind of, you know.
Well, Miguel Almiron's no Danny Drinkwater. So that's the real lesson here. That's the real lesson. No, so of course, you know, I had to double down and insult the entire United Kingdom and troll a lot of people.
It's the only thing you can do. It's, you know.
Exactly. They're going to call you stupid no matter what, so you might as well have some fun with it.
Rational, what's the word in war? A rational response or something in rational response?
Mm-hmm. Well, look, when Kyle XX69420 LFC from Brighton responds to you like that, you got to hit back. You got to hit back. Or who are you as a person?
You what, mate?
essentially. But like, it's like, you what, mate, but with kids playing Call of Duty on Xbox, somehow now into soccer. Freaking Gen Zers with their Tide Pods and whatnot, yelling at you on Twitter. But anyway, I thought it was awesome. I thought it was pretty cool. A lot of other people seem to think so too, and it's a bummer we're not going to be able to see too much of that anymore, because it does seem like Miguel is going to move on. Newcastle still the rumored team.
We could just do four DPs.
Eventually. Well, that's my conspiracy, is that Don Garber is going to come in and be like, well, you know, if Miguel's going to stay, we might as well put in a rule for to allow four DPs just for no particular reason.
Even if that were to happen, I still think it would be the most likely thing is we'd still sell Almiron and just buy two DPs instead of keeping him. But that's just me.
Probably. They seem kind of, well, you know, they've talked about it before. They kind of made a promise to Miguel to get him to England, and they're going to do that when the right offer comes and both parties are kind of in agreement. It's time to get it on. And it's not like they didn't accomplish pretty much everything they were trying to do here with him.
Yeah, and that's
a championship now, which is
yeah. And that's my thing, is like, you need to fulfill the promise you made to Almiron. And right, the promise probably involved, you know, there being a certain kind of fee, or, you know, an agreement that, you know, it had to be a fee that Atlanta United found acceptable, and that's fine, you know. And if they haven't received that fee, then that's something. But you know, the transfer window hasn't even started yet, so I mean, there will be offers that come in for him, and you need to, you need to uphold that promise to him, because not only for him, but for the next DPs that you want to bring in, you have to kind of show that you're not going to like stand in their way, so to speak, in terms of offering them kind of what you promised them. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're being a pushover. I know it sounds that way to a lot of people, but I think, but it's just, I mean, you can say it's stepping stone or whatever, but that's the only reason you're getting players of this quality at this age, is because you're giving them a route to get to where they want to go. So, right. Yeah, you have to get the right offer, of course, but you know, you can't just like, you know, show of strength, you know,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Well, it's about establishing credibility. It's about establishing yourself as a team,
right,
that's going to get these things done. If they're going to make promises, then they're going to get it done. And we're seeing it pay off already with the way Pity Martinez is talking about us. You know, Pity saying that other European teams weren't as committed to bringing him in and doing the right thing by him. And that's why he's going to Atlanta. So if we, you know, we see this, if players see us making these promises down the road and then seeing it paying off successfully, it's just going to open the net a little wider, and we're going to bring in more and more people who want to be a part of this because they know that it's a culture and a club that's going to treat them the right way. So don't just think about it as the dollar amount here. This is a long-term investment, folks. This is, what's a long-term investment, Joe? You're old, like golf clubs.
Fuck you. Yeah, it's golf clubs is a good, that's a good one. They are a long-term investment.
Okay, see.
Irons last forever.
Is golf clubs. There we go.
Irons don't change. what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. It's kind of like Tata. You know, like Tata moving on. I think that there's a natural just like, you know, fear of the unknown of the future, you know, because we've only known Tata as the manager. So, like, when he was announced that he was leaving, you know, there's a big, it's scary. And similar to Miguel Almiron, you know, all we've known is Miguel Almiron in this team, and we don't know how this team functions without him specifically. But it's going to be good. Pity Martinez is probably a better player. He's a more proven player in his career. Mm-hmm. He's basically, this is Teoto Football mentioned this, so, you know, if this is wrong, blame him. But he was basically saying, looking at like the general attacking metrics on him, basically Pity Martinez is doing in the Argentine Superliga last year, basically, this year, what Miguel Almiron was doing in MLS last year, like just like dominating. So yeah. In terms of the shots and offensive output that he was putting up. So yeah, it's good. Like Pity Martinez, people are kind of fearful of Miguel Almiron leaving, but I really am just super optimistic about what Pity's going to bring. And, you know, I don't know if it'll click right away. You know, sometimes things take time. People have to settle in. It's going to be a quick turnaround. Obviously he's going to get in and we're going to start having games like pretty soon. Like when we got Miguel Almiron, he was able to kind of acclimatize himself to the country for several months, like half a year almost, until we started playing games. It won't be like that way. It won't be that way for Pity, but as a player, I think he's probably, I would just say he's a better player, or he's going to give us more in the final third as like an attacker.
I think so too. I mean, this is a stunning signing when we're going to pull it, when we pull it off. You know, things can always go wrong, I guess, but I mean, there's a million different things confirming it, including,
it's so funny,
you know, Pity Martinez.
Yeah, it's so funny how like how many like I bet Darren's like the only one who's trying to like not totally confirm it, even though he himself has like given hints to it.
Yes.
You know, a couple, like a month ago or so. But like since then, in recent days, Pity Martinez himself has said he's going to Atlanta United. Their president has said he's going to Atlanta United. Now, like Darren Eels is getting asked about it, and he's like, oh, well, I can't talk to about a player under contract.
Classic Eagles. Classic.
I do wonder if that play, I do wonder if he's like upset about that might somehow damage their negotiating stance, you know, the leverage they have, knowing with other teams knowing that they have to sell Miguel to bring Pity in, or they don't have to sell him to bring him in, but they can't register both those players most likely.
Right.
Once the regular season comes. So I wonder if Darren is upset about that at all, but we'll see. I'll be interested to see when he is actually announced like officially to the public as an Atlanta United player, because his last game is supposed to be in the Club World Cup that comes up like this. Is it like this weekend?
22nd is like the last so next game weekend he can possibly play in. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's his last game. And then like the president of River Plate has said that after that game, he's an Atlanta United player. So I don't know. I just wonder. I wonder if they'll wait to announce him once they announce a deal for Miguel, you know, or if they'll just put it out there. I'm not sure.
Well, they don't have too much time. I mean, preseason starts in a month, which is insane.
So scary.
I know. It's such a quick turnaround. It doesn't leave a whole lot of time for us to just kind of breathe for a moment. But hey, if it means we're going to win the first championship in Atlanta in 23 years, I'm cool with it. I'm very cool with it. But Pity coming in, Pity's going to be different just because it's a more complete player. It's an older player. He's 25, which I don't think a lot of people realize that he's on the older end of the spectrum now. I mean, that's older than Joseph, I think. Joseph's 24.
I think they're
the same age now.
I think when we got Joseph, he was 24. Yeah, I think they're about the same age now.
So, I mean, that gives
Joseph
you some
25.
Idea. Yeah. So it'll probably be a quick stop for Pity. I mean, if he's trying to get to Europe, I mean, he's 25. He'll be in and out most likely, but still next year is going to be a whole lot of fun. And it's just another example of players. What?
When you Google Pity Martinez, the picture that pops up on his Wikipedia is just like a picture of his FIFA player, like his FIFA avatar.
It is. That's incredible. Oh my gosh.
But he's a month older or younger. No, older.
Mancha.
He's a month younger than Joseph Martinez.
Gotcha. But yeah, it's just another example of a player that, you know, has seen everything in Atlanta and thinking, hey, I can be a part of this and I can be successful and move on and I can play in front of the best fan base in that country and maybe one of the best in the world. Because, I mean, just the spectacle of everything last Saturday was stunning. I think it was Charlie Bohm who said something to the effect of, like, just out loud to no one in particular, this is a Super Bowl, essentially. I mean, it was remarkable.
That's who I was sitting next to, by the way, in the press box.
The Portland fan, yes.
Yeah. I didn't want to out him as that right away because he isn't. It's not a personal thing. I know, like, I think a lot of our fans would be like, oh, rooting for Portland. I honestly get it from their perspective. And Charlie is a super nice guy. Follow him on Twitter. He's a great Twitter follow, great writer.
He's a good follow, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But yeah, damn Portland fan.
But let's talk about this, though. Just I went back and watched the game for the first time last night on the television. And I mean, was getting the shivers all over again just from the whole aesthetic of the damn thing. I mean, it was we've seen the place full before, but everyone stood the whole time. Everyone sang the whole time. Sometimes that upper level can get kind of quiet and sit downy. Which is fine, because why the hell would you want to stand up and cheer from 500 yards away to watch Atlanta beat the Impact on like April 21st or something like that? But for this, it was something special, and you could tell throughout the entire thing. I mean, just remarkable, honestly. I've never quite seen anything like it, and there's literally nothing else like it in a stadium like that in the entire world. I mean, absolutely nothing, and it's right there in their backyard, and that's just insane to me still.
Yeah, it kind of hit me the first time the intensity of the crowd hit me during the game was, I think it was like the third minute or something, and well, obviously, you know, you see the TIFO and the choreo and all that stuff that happens before a game, and it's incredible, but it's just like, this is a little thing that just caught my eye and caught my ear was, in the third minute, I think Miguel Almiron gets taken out on a foul. And when that happened, just the whole stadium was like, hey, and like everyone in the stadium put like an arm up calling for the obligatory, you know, call for the foul or whatever. So that was just like, oh my gosh, like everyone is into this. Like everyone's paying super close attention to what's happening. That's really cool. Yeah, can go ahead.
No, you.
I do want to say something about the standing, okay. since you mentioned it. And it's like, I love the standing, don't get me wrong. I just do feel kind of bad for some people. Like, I remember when I was you know, in the supporter section before I was in the press box, you know, standing every game. I loved it, you know, and I stood every game and had no problem with it. And then, but then I would like see things on, you know, like Reddit or Twitter or whatever that was like, oh, like my grandpa, like, he can't stand because he has like a foot issue and like he couldn't see the game. And I was like, yeah, that does kind of suck. I don't know. and like some people can't stand, some people are, you know, have disabilities or just, you know, can't like physically stand for that long. So I don't know. Part of me does feel for them. It's like they need like, I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if there is a good solution, to be honest. Cause you don't want to tell people to sit. That's the last thing you want to do. Yeah, but,
I'm going to not get into this conversation because it leads into another conversation about another thing that blocks people's view. And I'm just gonna back out of this one slowly.
Just trying to add some nuance to the conversation. Don't hate anyone.
No, yep. Dear God, don't add us. Holy shit.
I just stepped
right. We're
just
trying to think about other people, guys. That's all it is. That's all it is. We're not insulting you personally. We're just trying to think about other people and how we can better everything. But it sounded great at the very least, even if some people couldn't see. yeah. I mean, it was loud. We noticed I was sitting next to Sam Franco from Mott, and we both noticed almost immediately just how well we could hear everything in the press box, which is normally pretty quiet. I mean, we could hear every single word of every chant, just about. Pretty awesome. And then, of course, the cell phone flashlight thing is always amazing. I think that, like, started in the state at Georgia games and just kind of like grown into a thing now it's been co-opted by Atlanta into their own unique thing, and people around the country were taking notice of that and talking about how that was something unique in soccer culture for sure, which is really cool, and it's something uniquely Atlanta, uniquely American, and something you don't see anywhere else, and that was awesome to see, and just low-key kind of another example of soccer fans taking SEC culture in Atlanta and turning it into a thing, which I could write a thesis on at this point. But it was an event, man. It was an event. And that's what has been so successful about all of this as far as getting people out there. Every single game is an event.
The Portland fans just getting so mad. They don't need cell phones to create atmosphere.
They need a giant dude with a chainsaw cutting a log for some reason. That's what they need. That's real passion.
Sam.
Joe.
When are we going to talk about the cup?
The cup. The which cup?
Oh, you know what I'm talking about. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do. I've stared at it like a million times. Just kind of catch myself looking at it, hanging up posters in my room of it, things like that. We did kind of get a little bit up close and personal with the cup, but not nearly as up close and personal with the cup as the strippers at Magic City did.
Ooh, no, we didn't. Yeah.
look, there were only a few options here when they got this thing to take it, and they chose correctly on a Monday, no less. They chose correctly to go to Magic City and pay that $100+ cover to get into there, just to take their trophy and flex a little bit, and also provide some of the single greatest social media in MLS history, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, what's funny to me is that, like, I went to Stoppage Time Live, and Julian Gressel was there. This was obviously, like, the day after Magic City went down. And somebody asked him about it, and he was like, oh, I have an alibi, like I wasn't there. And it reminded me of like brothers or like kids who are in trouble who are like trying to like
right,
you know. Like they know they're being a little mischievous with it, but yeah. I love that it's like it's been picked up as like a positive story.
exactly. Like any other like CD place and anything that like wasn't Atlanta, it would have been like, oh
yeah,
whatever. But now it just kind of feels like MLS has made it as a league. The cup, the trophy, the prestigious Philip F. Anschutz trophy, which sounds like a trophy you win for like winning a mathletics competition in high school, has now been to Magic City. Pretty much no one was like, man, you can't be doing that because of the children or anything like that. Everyone was essentially just like, great job. Although I still maintain that you do not Snapchat the strip club trip. You don't do it. You don't expose everyone like that, because it could have gone. There was potential for a negative reaction.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Ollie Shannon gets left off the hook.
It's very likely against the establishment protocol, the establishment rules, but it's also just like it's a bro code, man. You just don't do that.
Right. Exactly. So hopefully everyone like, don't told get wrong, their God, wives, hopefully everyone even. Told their girlfriends, you know,
yeah,
all that kind of thing. But even still, it's, for some of them, it was just, they did not mess around with the partying. My favorite moment from the celebrations was Chris McCann and Jeff Lorenowitz holding up the throw booze sign they had made on makeshift cardboard as they rode through downtown Atlanta. That was a beautiful, beautiful moment.
Talk about a couple of like mischievous brothers.
Yes.
Jeff Lorenowitz and Chris McCann love just like pranking, like pulling pranks together, pranking each other. just generally being little like redheaded, you know, miscreants. Yes. I don't know.
But
that's
yes,
not the right word. No. But
their family's really close and everything too. But they fully embraced the championship lifestyle there at the end. And they probably don't have much time to do it because Chris McCann's probably gone. But that's whatever.
I think he's got another year on his contract.
Oh God damn it! Are you serious?
Yeah. The postseason contracts email said that he was still on the roster as a player under contract. So that means it did not expire this year.
That's right. Michael Parker's contract did expire though. So they're trying to rework that. He said he wants to be back. I'm sure they'll get it done. Almost. I feel really, really positive about that. You probably don't screw over the captain from the championship winning team.
I would imagine it's one of those things where he's either going to play in Atlanta next year or he's going to retire. So,
right. Exactly.
And I don't think he'll retire.
Someone who will not be back in Atlanta. Greg Garza gone after this one. Had a big turnaround for him too. He went from celebrating in a parade to preparing to go eat Skyline Chili for the next year.
Ooh.
Yeah. I felt bad for Greg. He was an amazing human, by the way. We were big, big Greg fans, especially all his weirdness. He's the one who coined that the water lizard thing to describe yeah. Miggy running, yeah. which was beautiful.
Yeah.
I also one time watched him walk on to the training ground field, look up, stare at a few people beginning to start a rondo where they get in the circle and kick the ball back and forth, sprint into the middle of that rondo, and then slide tackle a completely stationary ball for no reason. And I fell in love with that moment. So I'm going to miss the weird and also the quality left back play, but mostly the weird because, Joe, the Bell era starts now.
Start Bello. Start mm-hmm. fucking Bello, man. It's going to be awesome. I'll be really excited to see a whole season of George Bello. I'm already getting like my fingers are tingling just thinking about it. Which is probably a little messed up, but that's another thing. I got to see a doctor about that.
Please seek help, yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it can't be understated how important Garza was towards the end of the season. Like you really think about it, the season turned around the exact moment he came into the back into the squad. Like even in the Toronto game, even though we lost that game pretty bad, things got a lot better when he came into that game for Chris McCann. And that was basically, that was his first appearance after like 5 months of being out. So the speed at which he was able to get himself back into like first team, like, you know, great form was pretty incredible and vital for this team. So, yeah, I mean, he will be missed at left back. But I think, you know, I honestly don't think we'll lose that much with Bello. In fact, I think if anything, Bello probably gives us a little bit more going forward. I don't know.
A little more dynamic.
I don't know. Yeah, he's kind of a different player.
For sure.
He's they're both more like of a attacking left backs, but yeah.
Exactly, which is going to be different. But again, that's another one of these long-term investments where we're eventually going to see a huge return for George if he develops right. And we're going to see a big payoff in MLS terms, if he continues to develop right, because he's just so ridiculously talented. The sky's the limit for that kid. And it's just going to be one of those things where it's another part of the process. Now that we are a few years into this, we're going to see the academy kids. We're going to see the homegrown kids start to make an impact. And when we can begin to mix what will hopefully be the best academy in the country by that point and the best homegrown collection in the country with the Pity Martinez's of the world coming in, this club is set up for a ton of success in the future on multiple levels, which is really exciting. And this is the first step.
While we're talking about the academy and these types of players, player to keep an eye on that has not been talked about much lately, probably because he hasn't played a game yet for Atlanta United in their academy, to my knowledge. Maybe he has behind closed doors or something. This kid, Will Vint.
Yeah, Will Vint from Manchester United.
From Manchester United. I think he lost his work permit status because his parents moved back to the United States or something. That's probably wrong. But I think he was forced to leave for like a legal reason. And so basically he chose Atlanta United. Like basically we recruited him. Like it was like a school, like a college football player or something. Like
right. And I think I mean, that's the great thing.
If you're Atlanta United, like that's the advantage you have though, is that you can like pull kids from wherever. He's not the only one that we've pulled from outside of like the Georgia area. I want to say Justin Garces is not from, I think his first name is Justin. He's not from the Atlanta area, I don't think. I think we've gotten another kid from Philadelphia. We got like a guy like Lauren Kissiadu, you know, like he's not from Atlanta. So, you know, that's kind of the advantage you have as Atlanta United with like the amazing training facilities. And that's just an approach that the team has taken to, you know, to the way they build the academy. I know, like I heard Paul McDonough, former Atlanta United, front office staffer, saying that he's in now Miami and they like want to make they want to form their academy around kids from Miami. They don't want to take from the outside area. And that's just like it's just a personnel decision, whatever. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Like everyone can do it their own way. But personally, I like taking kids from wherever and just, you know, attracting the best talent from wherever it comes and whoever wants to come sign contracts.
You got to recruit nationally, man.
That's
how
right.
Is he going to keep up with Bama?
We don't just build a wall. We don't just build a wall around Atlanta.
Nah. We're going
to go outside.
We go outside it. Yep. National level. Speaking of keeping an eye on homegrowns, Joe Patrick, who's keeping an eye on Andrew Carleton?
This is tough. This is a tough one because I really like Andrew Carleton. You do too. Mm-hmm. It's tough to see because we not like we know him personally or anything, but you know, just from having talked to him a couple times on occasion, just seems like a nice guy, you know, like a happy-go-lucky kind of guy who puts himself out there, which we've talked about before that we've said we liked, but it can possibly have some pitfalls, and now we're kind of starting to see that where he puts himself out there too much. And it kind of comes back, not even like comes back to bite him. It's like he kind of loses his perspective on what his purpose is. That sounds terrible, but like what his goals are as like a professional.
Let's explain the situation a little bit here too. The understanding, the rumor anyway, is that Andrew was celebrating early, I guess, before MLS Cup the night before. And, you know, got caught doing that instead of doing whatever I guess it was he really needed to be doing, even though he probably knew he wasn't going to be on the bench or anything like that or be in the 18. At least I'm assuming. Maybe he was supposed to. I don't know. But... you know, if you know you're not going to be the 18, fine, go do whatever you want. You're 17 and have way more money than I'll ever have in my life. go have fun. But just make sure your dumb friends or you aren't putting it out on social media, et cetera. if that is what happened. I'm still not entirely convinced that's exactly what happened, because someone would have seen the social media or have Snapchats or have the screenshots, I mean, and no one seems to. So I'm still a little confused on the reasoning for it, but even still, it indicates something that Andrew definitely messed up on. And I keep saying this, Joe Patrick, and everyone kind of blows it off, but this is the origin story, man. Every origin story, you got to have the turn. You got to have the call to the hero or whatever it is in the origin story. And this is it. This is Andrew Carlton's time to realize that he's got to buckle down and get things done. And it's going to be a big deal and pay off in a big way, because he was suspended from MLS Cup and the parade, man. They kept him out from the parade. That one was just crazy to me. They didn't even let him show up to that. So hopefully he learns a little bit here and we see him making an impact next year. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good point you make, is that, you know, and that's something that I've been trying to stress whenever I've talked about this, is that, like, this isn't the end for him. It might be the end for him at Atlanta United. We don't know that. That could happen. You know, who knows if he gets moved in the offseason. But it's definitely not the end for him and his career or anything like that. Similar to Barco, you know, it's just like I think it's just easy to lose perspective and forget that these are kids who are 18 years old, 17 years old, whatever they are. And they make mistakes, and I made mistakes when I was that age. Thank God I wasn't in like as public of a sphere and didn't have like the responsibilities put on me that they had, because I probably would have failed to an even greater extent than I already did fail in my life. But like, everyone makes those mistakes. Everyone has those failures. And so, yeah, you just gotta try to bounce back from that. And I think that, you know, when we talk about his Atlanta United career being over, possibly, like, that might be the case because it's the best thing for Andrew Carlton. You know, like, I'm kind of in that camp where it's like, I just want the best for him. And if that means he needs to go somewhere to get away from some of the people that, you know, might be leading him down the wrong road, or just he needs to be somewhere where he can be totally focused on soccer, on making himself the best professional he can be. If that's Atlanta, that would be awesome. If it's not, then so be it. I hope that he does whatever is best for him and his career. So, I just tend to think that might be like, I just feel like if I were him, maybe not if I were him, but if like I were his parents or his advisor, I would want him to go somewhere where like he didn't speak the language, was totally uncomfortable, and he had nothing to focus his mental and physical energy on but soccer. And like that, let that be the place where he expresses himself, because we know he can do that. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
It's an interesting decision too for a coach to make in literally his last game with the team. You know, his last thing with Andrew Carlton was to punish him, essentially.
I mean, so. Yeah, the team, the punishment for the game, and yeah, for the game, the post game celebration was definitely from the team. The parade could have been like a parental decision, possibly. Sure. Who knows? And that's why I'm a little uncomfortable talking about this, because we don't know all the facts.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like it's the first time. In fact, like, there's been other instances on Instagram where he's been, you know, very questionable things
have happened. I got hacked.
Yeah. And he's had to claim he's been hacked, which usually when you have to claim that,
yeah, it's
probably not it. But, you know, Best of luck to him. Whether it's here and elsewhere in the future, hopefully it's here. But if not, good luck to him.
I think he stays for whatever reason. But, you know, it may have a lot to do with whatever the new coach is coming in. And we're hearing a few different options for that. It will not be Sampaoli, Sam, whatever his name is, Jorge. Won't be him. But yeah, it may be GBS. It may be. Is that Alan Pardew's music? I think it is. I think I did just hear Super Troopers by ABBA.
And so he's dancing.
Alan Pardew might be coming in. Who knows? Who knows, man? There are a few options here. What are you hearing on your end, and who do you like?
I'm sorry. Did you just say, who am I hearing?
Yeah, man. Where's your ITK? Where's your connections with MLS? What are you being told here?
Yeah, I was just texting with Guillermo last night, and he had a nice cheese plate for dinner.
Of course.
No, I don't know. So, like, the thing about Barrascalotto, it seems like too perfect based on his, like on the surface level, the fact that he's won these championships, he's from Argentina, he's played in MLS, you know, all these things makes him seem like the perfect coach. And because of that, I like have this lingering doubt that it's like, that it's not so perfect. My personal favorite is Gabriel Inza from Velez. He's a European legend as a player. He played for Manchester United, PSG, Barcelona, Real Madrid. So he has like a tons of connections in Europe from his playing days. And by all accounts, our friend Peter Coates, who we interviewed earlier this season, he's like the preeminent English language Argentine league reporter. He says that he's like one of the outstanding managers in the league. Obviously, we got Yamil Assad from Velez. So I think he would be a great candidate. I don't know if he has any interest in coming here. Probably not. So he's one to keep an eye on. Another one from Argentina is Gabriel Milito. I forget where he is now. O'Higgins or something. He's one of the smaller Argentine sides. Another European legend, played for Barcelona. He's an Independiente legend as well, and he managed Independiente when Barco came up into the first team squad. So they would have a relationship. So that could be an interesting one. Maybe they go with him to try to see if they can kind of use that existing relationship to kind of get Barco feeling comfortable and get him going again. It's possible. Those are probably the three biggest name managers that we've heard of. But we're also hearing rumors that it could be a European guy coming in.
Alan Pardew in the flesh.
Pardew did not deny. He did not deny that he was. Well, I forget what the report was. He didn't deny
he was in
that.
Atlanta.
Yeah, he was at the game.
One guy apparently who saw him and talked to him, and no one else did ever see him. So he was
apparently
definitely.
He was asked maybe, if he was here.
Probably
for,
also could be sort of in Atlanta at some point.
Yeah, he was asked if he was here to talk about the managerial job, and he did not deny it. He didn't deny that. So that's the report on Pardew.
I like to think it was just him standing outside, like the hallway where Eagles was, and holding like a sign, like in Love Actually, like giving his pitch to Darren. And
I like to think he's standing there and someone like goes up and asks him a question. He part of it just stares at him and just takes a drag of a cigarette.
Amazing.
And that's
amazing.
The answer.
Guys.
Frank DeBoer. Frank DeBoer.
That's a name that popped up for Snorio. Yeah. Skiretta. Skiretta.
Yeah. Skiretta said that Frank DeBoer is a candidate. He was a manager at Ajax, won some titles there.
and then.
And he's managed three places. He's managed Ajax, then he managed Inter for 17 games, and it was a disaster. And then he managed at Crystal Palace. They actually like hired him. They went through a whole scouting coaching search, hired him as the manager in the offseason. He got the transfers in, he got the players through preseason, and fired after five games.
Sounds top. Let's bring him in. I've always wanted the Jason Kreese of Crystal Palace to come in and take over.
But he's got rings. He's got the rings. If you're a rings guy, like the Guillermo Barrascalotto fans, if you're a rings guy, then you know he's got to be someone you're interested in because Ajax titles, man, Eredivisie.
My thing is,
easy to win a title at Ajax as it is at Boca.
Yeah, sure. Yes, it's true. My thing is though, like, are young Argentinians going to be looking at Frank DeBoer and being like, "Yeah, I want to come play for that dude."
Yeah,
know? I know who that is. Let's do it. Because that was such the big draw of Tata to have that name recognition. Eventually, the Atlanta United brand is going to outweigh whatever manager we have, as far as players knowing it's a place they can go. And like I said, we're starting to see that with Pity Martinez. But my biggest thing with this next coach is that we have someone to further that idea that this is a place for South American talent and talent from really anywhere to come and, you know, get to that next level. And that starts with, and this is very college football of me, but you've got to have someone who can recruit, man. You got to have someone who can recruit.
Got to get the recruits in.
So you got to have someone who's going to connect with people. And someone like GBS or the guy from Independiente, whose name you said really quickly.
Gabriel Milito.
They could carry that weight, I think. And that's where Atlanta United's looking. That's where they're going to go, in my opinion. But it is fun to have Pardue. And I would like to start the Big Sam rumor on this show right now and see how far it gets out. It's fun to mention those guys, but it's going to be someone with some clout, I think, in South America.
Let's bring Alan Green back while we're at it.
We still have articles to post about Alan. but yeah, we'll find out that pretty soon. Darren set a date of like January 14th for us to have that solidified. Who knows what it actually means? He could have just picked a random
date. So soon.
It's all moving quickly. The season lasted forever. I mean, I remember we started in February and going to Nashville and playing in their first game. And then now we're all the way here. Having one MLS Cup and getting prepared for the next year and getting prepared for Champions League stuff.
And it'll be interesting to see what we do in preseason, because we're not doing Charleston Champions. What's it called? The Charleston Champions?
Challenge Champions. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
We still have yet to say that thing right once.
So it sounds like we might be playing some Mexican teams, possibly playing at altitude, trying to get ourselves accustomed to playing in CONCACAF Champions League. So, it's so fun, so exciting.
We're starting the DSS GoFundMe now for Sam and Joe's trip to Monterey, by the way, if anyone wants to get that together for the second round. So, yeah, we'll see. Hold a lot of stuff coming your way. As always, check out DSS, check out us, at @J_SamJones, at @JPatrick200. We're at 5-Stripe Final. If you're just listening to this for the first time, don't follow us on Twitter. And of course at @DirtySouthSock, blah, 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 blah. The website's great. We have awesome content all the time. We've got babies being born and we're talking about it on there. We've been baby South Soccer this week. We've had multiple baby stories. Shout out to Nick DeLuzio, by the way, for having a child immediately after the game. That's a great story up on the site. Jason Smith's got a great story up on the site. Just check out Dirty South Soccer. Just check it out. Just check out the website.
It's been a great week on Dirty South Soccer. Great stuff going up this week. Absolutely. As for our plans, obviously we do this podcast after games, or we try to. That schedule kind of got thrown off at the end of the year here. We'll get together whenever we feel like there's big news to talk about.
Yeah, or whenever y'all peer pressure us into it.
Right, pretty much. That's when we get on, is when we get enough peer pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So keep doing that.
We'll figure it out.
Keep us accountable. Hold us accountable.
For sure. But then we'd be right back to the regular schedule.
Because I was going to say, we're going to take a break this offseason. And it's like, well, a break is like 2 weeks.
Yep.
2 or 3 weeks. And then we'll have to be, have stuff to talk about again. So
never ends. That's why it's great.
This will probably be our last one for the year. I think it's safe to say that. For 2018.
I don't know. I may just do one because I'm bored. I'm doing nothing right now.
If you want to do an interview or something, like the one I did with Sebastian Salazar, which go check it out if you haven't heard it. That was just impromptu. I did not even expect to be doing that as a podcast. But
if anyone happens to come by my parents' house that's worth interviewing, I will let you know.
Just go stand on the street corner with a sign.
It's time to go. It's been a long one, but we felt
you deserved been a long one.
All this, but man, we go check out our 3-minute show we did live from MBS if you want to get the full expanse of joy that we were feeling in that moment after the game. But yeah, congratulations to you, the people, for sticking with us all year and sticking with Atlanta United and taking home the first championship in a real long time. It was. It was really fun. It was really fun.
If you have lasted this long, tweet a banana emoji at JSamJones. J_SamJones.
Unless you're muted, then don't do that. Yeah, do that. Sure, why not?
I'm just curious.
All right, love y'all.
Gold Market Research.
Bye.
Bye. Hurry, boy, it's waiting there.